The editor, Tina Brown, now has a swank website called The Daily Beast. Like the rest of us, she gets a daily flood of information over the internet. So we asked for some recommendations for what to fish out of that river right now. You begin your list here with a pretty dramatic headline. Here come the racists. What is this?
Well, this is a great piece that we posted on thedailybeast.com by the very interesting Democratic writer, young writer Matthew Iglesias. And he really talks about how the whole Skip Gates arrest affair has sort of triggered off sort of race-based pummeling of Obama that was sort of dormant during the election campaign. The Gates affair has sort of triggered off all the sleeping dogs. You know, one of the things that's interesting in the piece is that he talks about how part of this is because a lot of the attacks that are now being led are coming from the cable TV shows.
You're talking about talk show hosts like Glenn Beck of Fox, who's quoted here as saying that Obama has a, quote, deep-seated hatred for white people or white culture, unquote.
And Rush Limbaugh, too. So what you're seeing is that these talk show hosts are capitalizing on that feeling of underlying kind of marginalization that is coming from a certain sector of the population and hyping it to death to get ratings. But that, unfortunately, because of the lack, says Iglesias, of right now a very strong Republican leader, is sort of spilling out to be the face of the Republican Party, and it's spreading into the mainstream.
Tina Brown, you've also sent us an item here about writers and how they write or fail to write. It's called When Novelists Sober Up.
Yeah, this is absolutely fascinating. This comes from the website of the moreintelligentlife.com. That magazine actually is the Economist magazine in London. It's their kind of monthly glossy, if you like. But it's by the very good writer Tom Schoen, a former New Yorker writer, actually, and who's writing about how being alcoholic used to be part of the great literary tradition of America. And he talks about how, you know, William Faulkner and Scott Fitzgerald were the Paris and Brittany of their day, you know, caught in the funhouse mirror of fame. Their careers a vivid tabloid mashup of hospitalization and electroshock therapies. It's true that they were drunk from morning till dusk. You know, Hemingway, too, was a big drunk. And only the advent of rehab in the 60s, says Schoen, you know, interrupted this fall.
Do you look, when as an editor, do you look for a writer who's a little depressed or, you know, abusing substances of some kind?
Well, I do kind of think that artists are supposed to be a little bit crazy. I mean, you know, we're sort of moving away from that notion now. But I have to say that many of the best writers I know are moody, difficult, glum, and a little mad. There's another wonderful piece, though, that I did love this month. And this is from the Paris Review, the famous literary magazine that now publishes, you know, sporadically, but it's still full of fascinating stuff. And the famous interview, the Paris Review interview, is not dead, because here we have Katie Royfe's very, very fascinating interview with the nonfiction legendary writer Gay Talese, who wrote the very controversial book about the 70s porno industry, Thy Neighbor's Wife. And of course, he also wrote that great profile, which is included in every nonfiction anthology, Frank Sinatra Has a Cold, when he was a young writer for Esquire.
Now, this is a story. He's a writer. He's supposed to interview Frank Sinatra. He never gets to talk to Frank Sinatra, so he ends up talking to everybody who's around Frank Sinatra.
Everybody around. And it was a classic of Talese's because, you know, he specializes in the minor characters because he has this extraordinary obsessive curiosity. Katie asks him, you know, well, why didn't you write fiction? Because in a way, it's more liberating. And he said, well, you know, he was obsessed with getting it right about facts. He never did take the dramatic license that some of these so-called great nonfiction writers have, particularly in later years. And he says, you know, nonfiction writers are always regarded as second-class citizens. They're the Ellis Island of writers, which I rather liked.
Mm. Although there's a moment in this interview when Gay Talese is talking about the first time that he got an article published in the New York Times. He's walking through Times Square, and he sees that big Times Square zipper, that big electronic sign that still shows news headlines up there moving along, crawling along. And he climbs into the building and meets the guy who types in the headlines and makes a story out of that. And when I thought about that little item that you've sent me, I got to thinking about how radically the media have changed.
Well, that is, I think, part of the, for me, the great love of this piece, is that it really shows a moment when literary journalists, if you like, really savored the detail, really savored the reporting, really gave the writer space and scope to develop great narrative nonfiction. You know, he says, which I love, he says on the front, he never wanted to be a front page journalist at the Times. He says on the front page, you're stuck with the news. The news dominates you. I wanted to dominate the story. I was writing short stories. And this is true. It is a form I miss. And now, of course, running a website, I used to edit The New Yorker. And the one thing I do miss, the scope to do narrative journalism. And I still believe that that is a very, very precious form that we want to preserve, because it's in the context, in the detail, that you frequently manage to glimpse the truth.
Tina Brown, thanks for sharing some of the stories you're reading.
Thank you so much.